Welcome to the Business of Sport, brought to you by Sports Finder. Every week, our CEO, Ahmad El-Hawly, and his co-host, Rob Yowell, founder of Gemini Sport, come together to break down the hottest topics in the world of the business of sport.
Welcome, everybody, to another week of the Business of Sport. Myself, Ahmad El-Hawly, your host, and my co-host, Mr. Rob Yowell. Rob, once again, welcome, buddy. What's happening in the world of sports? Let's get straight into it, not waste any time. Indian Premier League has set a new viewership record of 140 million viewers. Wow. opening weekend, 140 million viewers. Unbelievable.
Well, you know, again, I know we kind of touched on this, you know, with the, you know, the record setting, contract, just again, it, you know, this is just purely validation of, you know, the popularity of some sports worldwide that may not have that following in the U.S., but we're seeing sports starting to make its inroads over here. We talked about it a few weeks back about some of the franchises being acquired and here in the U.S. for a cricket league, and you know this is just more fuel to that fire on that this game, this sport, has a massive global following, to say the least. And in some cases, it's just, you know, it could just be three or four countries that are driving those numbers. But I mean, it's everybody. And this is another indicator of the respect that sport has for every game. And, it's just testament of the brands that why they sponsor it and why these media agencies, you know, pay the rights fees. I mean, this is, proof's in the pudding. We don't have, those numbers are massive. We'll take those numbers in the NBA and the NHL and NFL. You know, NFL is probably the one league that maybe exceeds those numbers. But I mean, for crying out loud, that's an impressive first weekend.
Yeah. So the opening match had a 47% increase in numbers compared to 2022. The opening weekend generated 1.47 billion total video views on GeoCinema, which is their live streaming platform. That's per time watch up 60% year on year to an average of 57 minutes. This is just the opening weekend. GeoCinema also scored 50 million user downloads on the first day of the new IPL season. Another interesting fact is GeoCinema is actually owned by Viacom. And they are the digital media rights holder of the IPL in 2023. They had 23 sponsors signed up for advertising on the platform in the first week of the tournament. And just from those numbers, what we're witnessing here is an absolute explosion of engagement on, as you said, the sports that's not even that big in the States yet. So imagine now with all the infrastructure that's being built in the States, once that gets going and it becomes as popular as some of the sports in the States, those numbers are going to keep rising and rising and rising. So unbelievable numbers. Unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's again, you know, there is a lot of us, you know, like yourself, you know, operate, you know, kind of outside your home country, you know, dealing from a business standpoint. So, you know, when you get a chance to, experience, you know, some sports that may not, you know, obviously I know cricket's, you know, popular down under, but, you know, here in the U.S., I mean, it's not something that's, you know, readily available. And so when you get to India and you get to to markets, like the U.K. and others that, embrace that sport and watch it, it's a cultural eye-opening experience, you know, for a lot of sports executives that really have never seen it at this level. And again, you know, just educate, you know, I tell anyone, you know, certainly the students in my class, don't put any walls up around your ability to learn more about another sport. you know, whether it's rugby or whether, you know, again, pickleball, we've talked about. I mean, there are sports that are exploding around us that are new. And there's ones like cricket that have been around a long time and are NFL-ish in other markets as to their following and their, the impact they have on a sporting viewing community. So, you know, this is just, again, a reminder that, you know, sports as a whole is an aggregator. It's a unifier. And, you know, here's just one of those, you know, cases where you've got, you know, that sports, you know, fan base, you know, speaking loudly and saying, hey, we're over here and we're not going away. And so, you know, for those of us that work, you know, with sponsors and brands, you know, that want to do business in some of those countries, you know, we need to educate ourselves on how cricket operates and how those fans, you know, embrace and consume that sport. And, you know, those brands that want to jump in there and build some equity with those fan bases, you know, it's money well spent.
So let's just a quick question for you. Those sorts of numbers, what is a sponsorship worth, in your opinion?
Look, I kind of said it. You know, I mean, it's those are NFL-ish numbers, right? I mean, those are massive. And we've talked about on this show, you know, NFL selling, you know, halftime show sponsorships at the Super Bowl for $60 million per year. You're talking about, multi-million dollar, you know, relationships with a league. And obviously, and that's a sport where you've got front of jersey sponsorships for those teams. So, I mean, I know, you know, many of those clubs are getting numbers very similar to what Premier League, you know, soccer clubs are getting on the front of their shirts. You know, the, you know, those 30, 40 million euro type of numbers. Those are numbers that you know, brands are paying to be on the front of, you know, cricket club, you know, jerseys. So, wow. you know, that alone, let's just say that they're paying a lot more to be on the front of those cricket jerseys than they're paying to get their patch on the Lakers or the 76ers.
But maybe they also,
Lakers are getting 20, but you know,
yeah, you're also getting exposure to like hundreds of millions of people, so which is ridiculous. Absolutely. Yeah, interesting. Speaking of the Lakers, let's move into our next segment, the NBA. This year, the NBA season was the highest attended regular season in NBA history. 22,234,502 ticketed fans attended games, breaking the league's previous record of 22,124,559 total fans set in 2017 to 2018. I think I did that one pretty well, especially with those long numbers. So.
Yeah. Well done.
We saw arenas packed on average at 97% capacity this season. There were 791 sellouts across the league. The league's previous sellout record was 760 games in 18-19 season. This season marks just the second time the league has pretty much eclipsed 22 million people in attendance in a regular season. NBA games this season averaged 18,077 fans per game, a record for the league. One game that really stood out was San Antonio Spurs versus the Golden State Warriors at the Alamodome. 68,000 people attended that one. So what's going on with the NBA? We're seeing record attending fans in stadium. We're seeing TV viewership drop off for all-star games. And we're seeing college basketball games outdoing NBA games on some weeks. It's a really confused story here. what is that?
I think it's a couple things. One, a lot of NBA fans, you know, I mean, you know, there's a lot of planning that goes into games and you're buying packages, maybe not season tickets. So what you've got is a couple things. One, you know, look, it's a well-marketed product. And it's fun to go see those games live, you know, frankly. I mean, I any sporting event, you know, a live experience is much greater than watching at home, you know, majority of the time. Now, you know, and so a lot of those, you know, well marketed, you got stars, you've got exciting matchups. I mean, look, you know, NBA is a fantastically marketed product. You're marketing stars much more than your marketing team. So like a lot of fans are going to see Steph, and they're going to see LeBron, and they're going to see Giannis and the like. You're going to see KD. You know, when he was healthy this year. So, I mean, you're going to see those players. Two is, you know, once you're there, I mean, for crying out loud, you probably paid $200 for the ticket. You've paid $40 to park. I mean, you're already $500 into this for, you know, to be at the game. Damn if you're going to leave, right?
Wow.
You know, you've made the commitment. And look, you're there to be, you know, it's part of the experience. Now, you know, we kind of flip a little bit over to the viewership side. And you vote with your remote sometimes. You know, hey, you know, the game's a blowout. You know, maybe you tuned in to watch that game, and Kawhi was on load management that game. You know, and you're like, okay, I kind of wanted to see how Kawhi matched up, and Kawhi's out. I'm not watching this game. I'm on to something else. You know, even if you were a fan and you went to that game and Kawhi was on load management, you can't really go. And plus, they've already counted you for coming through the gate anyway. So, you know, while some of the numbers are misleading, I mean, give the NBA a lot of credit that they market their league very well. A lot of teams have gotten smart and created, you know, affordable ticket packages for people to kind of buy, buy a package of 10, 12 games, and so they can go attend those games. I mean, you're not trying to buy the whole season and spend your paycheck. But, you know, I think the teams – have done a very good job of bringing the fans back. And remember, we're still, you know, I think we're now kind of, you know, back to a little bit of normalcy, right? You know, we're far enough away from the summer of 2020 and all the restrictions. And I think a lot of, you know, pretty much every market now has lifted, you know, anything related to wearing a mask and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you know, I think we're back to normal. And so, you know, people are ready to, hey, I want to go see my team play. I want to go see my favorite player play. And so, you know, that plays itself out in an attendance jump. Look, when we get home, we get distracted. There's a lot of things on TV. Hey, I can record the game, and I'm going to watch my news show. Cause, you know, obviously we got a lot of stuff going on in the world that tends to be newsworthy that maybe we want to catch up on. And you've got that ability to change the channel. You don't have the remote in your hand when you're sitting in the seat at the crypto.com arena and your Lakers are getting blown out by, you know, the Warriors, and you got to go, well, you know, I want to change the channel. No, you're going to stick it out. You're going to watch that game. You're going to finish your beer, your popcorn, whatever. And you're going to watch that team finish this night out. So, you know, that's kind of a little bit, you know, and you talked a little bit about college basketball and certainly the growth of the women's game. I mean, look, you know, we're, you know, in some cases we're getting to know our NBA players a little bit better than we got to know our college players, you know, because those college players that we thought we knew in college are now first or second year players in the NBA. And so, you know, you probably get a little bit of that carryover as well, that, you know, your favorite player, you know, a player that played for your favorite, you know, maybe your alma mater, your favorite team in college, you know, only stayed a year. Now he's in the NBA, and you want to still see him play. So you maybe get a little bit of that crossover as well. But all goes down to, you know, the NBA is a very efficient and very well marketed, you know, product. And there's some exciting players in the league right now. All-Star game is not real. You know, again, it's not real competition. You know, we kind of go back to that a little bit. And, you know, for those of us that are purists, you know, the All-Star game meant something back in the day. You know, there was a lot of pride in it. They played, you know, guys didn't opt out. You know, baseball is probably the one that still has something to play. It gives you some, gives you home field advantage, or, you know, those kinds of things in the World Series. But, you know, the NFL had to get rid of it because guys didn't play. You know, so where there's real competition and things mean something, look, fans will watch, and the NBA has done a good job of giving that to us, with this play-in, because games down the stretch meant something. meant whether you got into the play-in or maybe you clinched the sixth spot in the playoffs, didn't have to get into the play-in tournament. There was, where in years past, at the, those last four or five games maybe didn't mean much and people started mailing in and sitting guys, but, they had to play those out this time. So helped draw some fans in and there was still some intrigue and, still much to be determined before the season ended.
Interesting. Very interesting take. When you put it that way, it makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah, and let's not – again, let's not – for our conversation last week, and I'm sure you'll get to this, and I know we mentioned it, but can our man Dana White put on a show? Does he put on a show? He obviously rebuilt and built one of the biggest entertainment brands in all of sport. But, man, he put on another great show this weekend.
$11 million in ticket sales in Miami. Last time they were in Miami, they did $440,000. So,
man put on a show. But you know what?
Yeah.
Think of every one of those fights that we looked at. We made sure every one of them happened.
Let's talk a bit about that actually before we move into our next conversation. We had the UFC revisit Miami in many years. As I just mentioned, their last ticket sales in Miami were literally at $444,000, I'm pretty sure. And they broke the record again at the new arena with ticket sales at $11 million. That was UFC 287. Adesanya. Just for those that don't know much about the actual event. So the other part of that is also the big announcing almost of the UFC and WWE merger. And one of my favorite things to do is to watch that Dana White's press conference after the fight. So I watch every single one because I find it really, really interesting. Dana White said some interesting things in that press conference. He mentioned that Miami is the city today that LA was 10 years ago. He goes, every nightclub's buzzing, every restaurant's full. Like, it is on fire. There's things happening everywhere and anywhere. And he said that they're going to be making more regular visits to Miami. And that's because the mayor and the governor of the state of Florida have this real focus on this business growth. And again, another stat which came out today is venture capital investment in cities. Miami had over 278% growth just year on year, the highest growth percentage in the country. So we're seeing the UFC into these markets and absolutely dominate with everything that is happening there, dominating. We see the big merger between the two companies, and I asked him, what value is this going to add to the UFC? He says that the collaboration was always there because you had UFC fighters going to the WWE and vice versa with Brock Lesnar and a few others. I can't remember that. One more, I can't remember his name now, but his name will come to me. So what we're seeing now is we are at the beginning of sport and an organization that's about to conquer the world because they're building a PI in Mexico. They're looking at a PI in Puerto Rico. They're looking at a PI in Africa. And Africa was one of the most mentioned topics for Dana White after the event because Israel Adesanya is originally Nigerian. He's of Nigerian roots. So that this brings back the African dream to actually take and do a final UFC pay-per-view in Africa. So this international explosion now is about to really happen. We've seen a lot, but it's about to double down. And he also mentioned that Ari Emanuel, what he brings to these two companies and his mastermind and the current structure that he's put in place Dana White is the CEO of this new company that they're doing. Vince McMahon is one of the chairmen. And, of course, you got Ari. We're about to witness history. We're about to witness the growth of the sport absolutely on steroids. And we're about to witness absolute business mastery by these three powerful men. So numbers are working for them. Growth is through the roof. This organization was criticized for moving through the actual pandemic. They didn't lay off anybody. Grow. Their brand is flying. Sponsors are throwing money at them. What a good time to be part of the UFC.
Well, absolutely. And again, let's not forget that Florida was a state that opened themselves up right away to get UFC back on U.S. soil following COVID with the event in Jacksonville. So Dana White is a man that never forgets those that backed him when he needed it most, right? He's obviously a big fan of Donald Trump because, Donald Trump was someone that said, hey, I love what you're doing and I want you to have fights in my casinos, in New Jersey, opened his doors, up very early on in the lifetime of UFC. And when, they were over on Fight Island and fighting, at odd hours, in order to accommodate U.S. viewers, it was Ron DeSantis and in the state of Florida that said, hey, we're open for business. Come on down to Jacksonville. Put on a show in our arena and let's get live sports back. Dana White, is very fiercely loyal to those type of people. And then, to make the comment that he made of what LA was 10 years ago, well, I mean, that's a gravitational pull of we're seeing a lot of people leave, California, Southern California, and going to places, like here in Arizona, going to Florida, going to Texas, going to Nashville, going to places where, maybe cost of living's a little bit different,
Vegas,
lifestyle's a little bit better.
Vegas.
They're going to places where things are happening. Not where they're cost of living's going out of whack and they're telling them their 5-year-old kid's got to get, two vaccinations before they can go back to school. But by the way, even after they got it vaccinated, they still got to wear masks in class. And the teachers really don't want to work. I mean, not to get off a tangent, but I mean, it's one of those things that's just, trend wise that, Miami is business, big, obviously was, very big in the crypto space, but, you mentioned, got a lot of VC investment into going on, down there, and it's, the city's vibrant, city's popping, and if you're a league and you're an organization like UFC, you want to be somewhere where things are happening, and Miami's hot right now, literally and figuratively.
Absolutely, and it's a good time of year to get down there. Actually, where's the better time?
And if Messi comes to enter Miami, then all bets are off. Look out.
It's game over.
Yeah. Game over. You got Bex and Messi, and all of a sudden Inter Miami FC becomes a hot ticket.
Messi would have pulled off an absolute miracle. I mean, what he's done already is beyond words, because you've got David Beckham there building half a billion-dollar stadiums and teams and, It's crazy. I was there in 2016, and because I stayed in South Florida for a few months, and I went down to Miami, and it was nice. Don't get me wrong, but it still had a few interesting pockets. I haven't been down recently, but I've had people who've been down there, and they can't speak enough praise of the city. So. And all these numbers validate basically what we are saying now, because no other city is sort of attracting and pulling these sorts of numbers and this sort of tourism. So, and speaking of Jacksonville, so again, speaking of loyalty and Dana White, he said, we owe Jacksonville one more event because they opened their doors for us. mm-hmm. during the pandemic, and he's gone back there. So, you know, strength to strength.
Man of his word. He's a man of his word and does not forget those that were there when they needed him. And God forbid you or your business, and if you were on the wrong side of that and didn't take his phone call or maybe pulled your business out of his lane. Yeah. Because, like, he is a freight train rolling right now, and good things are happening for UFC, and he can bring an event to your town, and it can boost your economy. So no doubt that's good to hear that Jacksonville's going to be back on the slate, because, yeah, they did do him a solid couple years back, for sure.
100%. Speaking of the world of crypto, we just mentioned earlier, let's do a bit of a update on the world of NFTs, which is our world. A couple of years ago, this world was absolutely booming. We had, at the time, Dapper Labs was generating $500 million a month through the NBA Top Shot. It was the hottest thing that we'd seen in years. Unfortunately, things have taken a bit of a turn, and we'll get into why. So at the moment, we have Dapper Labs. They're pretty much the big boys, them and Soray. The company has had laid off 20% of its staff for the second time in 4 months. They've lost huge executives. They're dealing with legal questions, whether these digital collectibles are to be treated as securities. SEC is really moving in on that. Their licensing deals are being brought back up again. They're going to the leagues like the NFL and the NFLPA and telling them, stop working. We have to restructure. And another one is DraftKings. They've also brought in a few big players like the NFLPA. Another one is Soray. He's also brought in multiple big players like the MLB, the MLBPA, the MLS, the MLSPA. They said, guys, we need to get back on the negotiation table and re-look at things. What's going on?
Well, you know, look, you're someone that has spent a lot of time in this business, but I think what it is, you know, we've seen, the market correct itself, and the reality of is you know, obviously what we work in, you know, NFTs, you know, look, it is commemorative and it's collectible, and where you can kind of create some, obviously the technology behind it being, you know, through the blockchain of being able to collect lifetime royalties as that NFT moves through the cycle and is traded and exchanged, over the blockchain. I mean, you know, I think it's, if anything, I think everybody kind of, had to check themselves a little bit that CryptoPunk Monkeys, Bored Apes and all those kinds of things really were just, they were a bad form of art that really couldn't justify and sustain, those values. And that, from a sports side, I mean, there was, look, they were obviously making a lot of these, financial commitments with crypto money and behind it. And, that bubble burst a little bit. And so, you're seeing a reset. But, those people that are, that kind of stayed true to the core and really, wanted to, build this category and this platform up, for the long term play. Those are the ones that are still around. The ones that flamed out were ones that were in it for the quick grab, and some maybe got out before it really hit. And then there's ones that just took it in the shorts, and all of their investment dollars went poof in the night, and off they went. I still think there's some value in it. I believe that, it's a great platform, for the NIL, that we've talked about a little bit. I mean, it's kind of a cool thing for student athletes to leverage their name, their image, and their likeness. Where you can, attach, interesting and valuable, utilities to those NFTs, that's where you drive the value. And, as with anything, they're digital. You can do massive releases, or you can do very selective releases, and those, in, you know, in a case, you know, really adjust the value, you know, or drive the value, you know, for what they might be worth. Releasing 30 is a lot different than releasing 3,000 of one, just like it would be if it was a trading card. So, you know, I think it, you know, the markets always correct themselves. You know, this one is one that we kind of watched happen right in front of us, and you know, now it'll, you know, be one of those, you know, strong survives, and those that you know, are really kind of committed to this long term are going to be the ones that you know, see the benefit.
Absolutely. I mean, I've mentioned this before, and I'll say this again. We were entering the negotiation table and hearing ridiculous deals for college quarterbacks at $250,000 guarantees without a single NFT being sold. And that was just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, if you look at some of the deals for these major leagues, multiple companies competed for rights, and we're talking numbers, guarantees that were pushing past $10 million. Like, that's just guarantees. That's without the additional revenue that comes from the sales and the commissions and so on and so on. So he got blown out of proportion. He got dirty at some stages where people abused the hype and the demand. But hey, about 4 to 6 weeks ago, an NBA player sold his NFT collection for $187,000. Mr. Giannis. So I know he's a superstar, but market's still there, right? So yeah. The moral of the story is that those that, where there's value, there's dollars. Where there's rubbish, there's no more dollars. The overhype stuff's gone. And players like ourselves, we're in it for the long term, because we really believe in the technology and the value it adds to the sporting world. So I think these are very good signs. These are signs and moves that will rein in these ridiculous price valuations that weren't called for in the first instances, because too much, way overvalued, way overpriced. And, you know, they're all getting caught out now. And I can guarantee you there'll be court cases that are going to come of this. Big ones too. So it's not the end of companies disappearing in this space. There's going to be a few more before it really cleans up. But, you know, we just got to keep going and keep pushing.
Absolutely. And like I said, I'm bullish with you on it as well, that it's got value when properly, you know, marketed and used, and it's a, we've seen some positive results in the approach that you take with Sports Finders. So you know, I believe that there's a market out there for it, and long as you know the greedy ones have been kind of milked out a little bit, and so like you said, the ones that are out there, you know, are in for the long haul, and I think we'll see some successful programs in the years ahead.
Absolutely. And we move to our final segment, actually. Your favorite tournament, the Masters. CBS says that they had a combined viewership average of 16.251 million viewers, the highest watched Masters on any network. That final round was most watched golf telecast on any network in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. That final round peaked with more than 15 million viewers. The whole week was pretty much golf. If I'm going to be honest, all we heard were the Masters, from the menu down to the LIV golfers versus the PGA golfers, and you know, then there was TV viewership and the prize money and John Rahm's four-stroke win, and you know, just never ending. But great, huge numbers in the world of golf. What do you think pushed this drive?
Well, you know, look, I'd say a couple things. I mean, one is, you know, we're starting, you know, sadly we witnessed, you know, the just the struggles that, that Tiger has. You know, Tiger is, again, set his own record, making his 23rd consecutive cut at the Masters. Literally made it on one leg, and you know, made it Saturday morning and had to turn around and play, you know, later Friday and or later Saturday, and you could see that his, you know, his body, you know, weather was awful and you know, made it difficult. But what you saw is look, whether you agree with it or not, you know, the media has guys wearing black hats, and those that went to play with LIV Golf, you know, as part of this, you had a leaderboard with three or four of them right there. You had a guy in Brooks Koepka who was my choice, if I recall, last week to win this thing. And if you know, Brooks led, you know, through 54 holes and didn't give up the lead until what, the eighth hole on Sunday. But you had what you always get you excited for Augusta, and that's you had great personalities. You had a great leaderboard. I mean, you had Masters or major winners vine. You know, you had Phil Mickelson going low at age 53 on Sunday to post the clubhouse lead at 8 under and say, "Come in and get me, boys." And you know, you had Koepka dueling with Jon Rahm. You had Justin's, Jordan Spieth out there playing well. You had these name golfers that were you know, playing great. And, you know, in some way, it's just Augusta. You know, it's the first major. You had drama. You had a guy like Jon Rahm that you can't help but root for. It's Seve's birthday. You had all these things that really, you know, tied into the, to history of the game, and certainly history at the Masters. And so, you know, I think all those things kind of factored in, and you know, there wasn't a lot of competition that day. You know, the Masters is very, you know, it's Easter Sunday. Everybody's kind of at home. You know, we're, you know, probably spending time with if I lived closer, I probably would have been at my parents' house and watching it with my dad. And I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, golfers out there that, you know, men and women that, you know, Masters Sunday is kind of like one of those days where, you know, growing up, you watched it with your dad. And when you start talking about, I remember Seve winning it on 40 years ago, his second Masters on his birthday. You know, sadly, I'm old enough to remember that, right? But, you know, you remember history like that. And then to hear, you know, kind of the story of, you know, Jon Rahm's story when he first met Seve. And how Seve was who inspired his parents to take up the game when he won it the first time, when he won the Ryder Cup in 97, you know, and that ultimately, you know, made them, you know, get their son involved in the game. And you know, here he is, you know, as a, you know, 28, 29 years old, winning his second major tournament. But more importantly, you know, winning one that has a special meaning to him as a player, because of Seve, but also, you know, that look, the Spanish, you know, Spain has now not a set, what, eight, no, six, six green jackets from four different players, which, you know, has them second, you know, next to, you know, American winners of the green jacket. So it's, you know, there's a little bit of history, a little bit of drama. Look, the second nine on Sunday, at Augusta National is always special, and it didn't disappoint.
Wow, there you go.
There you go.
You summed it up. You summed it up a lot better than me, because my golf knowledge is very, very limited. So,
you know, it's a moment like no other. I mean, you know, the Amen Corner, the Azaleas, you know, obviously they got through terrible weather on a couple of those days, and you know, it was nice and sunny, and they finished it. You know, there was worry that they may have to play that on Monday, but it was, you know, again, the Masters is a special place, and I encourage anyone that is a golf fan to find a way to get there for a practice round, for, you know, par three contests, and if you're fortunate enough to get badges on Thursday through Sunday, it's a special experience. So. My brother-in-law and my nephew were there on Sunday, and so I, you know, a father-son moment that I know those two won't forget. We all have weird connections to events. You know, I've been to that tournament with my dad and my brother, and to know that, you know, I've got my nephew and his dad there kind of experiencing, you know, a memorable day, you know, John Rahm, you know, winning his first Masters, winning it on 70's birthday, 40 years to the day he won his second and final Masters, you know, started the tournament with a double bogey, you know, so, you know, all kinds of really interesting story. Golf, you know, sports is the ultimate reality show, and we got 4 days of it at Augusta again.
Speaking of Augusta, one of the most fascinating things about this event is that from what I've read and seen, there's only like six sponsors that they deal with, and some of those sponsors are IBM, AT&T, ExxonMobil, and a few others. What's the philosophy there? I mean, what's the because you know this is your will.
Yeah.
Take us through that, please.
Yeah. Well, look, like I said, the Masters is unique. The show, and the players. You notice, you know, the I know they you, for those that you know follow on Twitter, you know, you saw the concessions prices. You could buy one of everything on their concessions board and spend $65, $66. You know, you and I go to an NBA game. That's two beers and a hot dog, and we're already at $66.
Wow.
So, you know, there's a moment, you know, you go back in time a little bit, you know, all the cups are green. There is no logo signage on the course anywhere. They try to bring you the tournament commercial free because, you know, those sponsors know that they're in a pretty exclusive group. That's just the way that, Augusta National has operated, how the Masters has been broadcast. They are less is more on the sponsorship and let the golf and the course, you know, be the show. But I will tell you that, you do go buy some merchandise there. You know, they are not concessions level prices, my friend. Let me tell you, you can't get out of that pro shop under $300 if you're a golf fan, because you want one of these and two of those and three of these, and next thing you know, you're like, oh boy, there's not a $3 pimento cheese sandwich coming out of that. You know, look, Augusta does make its money, again, it's always been about keeping that course and the history there, you know, just really keep it pristine. Totally the opposite of what you see at the Waste Management Open, which is an absolute, you know, party show. Again, they're both great because they're both, that's the beauty of golf, is that, you can create atmosphere in many ways. And Augusta, that atmosphere is created by tradition, and the, you know, the exclusivity of the course, and how it's presented to the patrons. They got special words for those that go there. It's not the back nine; it's the second nine, and every hole's got a name. And look, they've got a lot of traditions that come out every year as we watch it. And then you immediately switch to another golf tournament. There's logos on the flags and there's signage on the grandstands and you're going to a commercial break. You know, the Masters has kind of had a history and a tradition to make it commercial free, very clean from a sponsorship standpoint. But again, if you're one of those, you know, four or five sponsors that has the right to say you're an official sponsor of the Masters, that's extremely valuable and carries a lot of cachet.
So the six sponsors, from my understanding, are AT&T, Delta, IBM, Mercedes, Rolex, and UPS. Unbelievable. So let's go back through. I just want to go back through last year's numbers in terms of their commercials. The 2022 revenue from Masters merchandise, $69 million. There's your $300 average there.
Yeah.
There you go. Badges, Badgers $40 million. Yeah. Badgers $40 million. Badgers, wow. International TV rights $25 million. Concessions $8 million. Encore sponsors $0. Domestic TV rights $0 last year. Wow. That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's a different cat. It's and it's again, it's what makes it special. They you know, it's the one tournament that's, you know, it's not run by an organization or a governing body. It's not run by the RNA. It's not run by the USGA or the PGA. It's Augusta National, and it's wow. One of the majors, and it's you know, you only get there. You won a tournament, you're a past winner, and you're the U.S. reigning U.S. amateur. I mean, it's pretty special, you know, to get an invitation. You know, you win the mid am, you know, all that kind of. I mean, again, you know, we watched an amateur this year, you know, was in playing in the final group.
I seen you tweeting about that. Yeah.
And, you know, hey, we, you know, heck with the silver cup. Let's go get a green jacket. I mean, that was his attitude. And then, you know,
sure.
I love it. I mean, heck, I mean, you know, he played well. You know, obviously was the low am, got the silver cup. But he's got a story. Lost his dad to Alzheimer's and has his dad's, you know, quote, you know, if you're going to do something big, you know, on his arm, you know, tattooed on his arm. So, you know, kind of a special, you know, story, you know, within the story. You know, I was like, hey, man, go low, go win this thing. Why not? I mean, if there was ever a year, why not? You know, it's just one of those things that that tournament's got some really special traditions. You know, the amateurs sleep in the crow's nest there at Butler Cabin. And, so there's always something, special about that, you know, getting those past champions to come be, you know, starters. Freddie Couples being the oldest, oldest player to make a cut. You know, it's 63, and then you got Phil going, you know, low on Sunday at 53, the lowest final round by oldest guy to, you know, shoot 65 on a Sunday. I mean, so you had all kind of, look, it, sports just throws stuff at you, and it's. Look, I give the LIV golfers a lot of credit. You know, they didn't make it about LIV versus PGA. I think the broadcasters kind of missed some opportunities to interview Phil after he dropped 65 and was the clubhouse leader. They did interview Koepka, afterwards. But I mean, look, I thought that those, you know, as we all know, if Phil wasn't on the LIV tour, that he would have been interviewed the minute he walked off the course after shooting that. A little bit of pettiness there. And again, I don't know if that's coming from, you know, Augusta National, or if that was CBS, or that was, or Phil said, I'm not available. It's not my moment. Who knows? But, it kind of stood out a little bit, but overall, a great weekend of golf. You know, obviously a special weekend, you know, for John Rahm and his family. Now we're sport just moves along, right? We're coming down to the wire with Champions League, you know, entering into their next phase. We've got the EPL coming down the stretch. We've got, you know, NBA playoffs getting ready to start. We got an NFL draft coming up, you know, later this month. I mean, hey, man,
NFL,
sports doesn't stop.
We've got YouTube TV has also released their Sunday ticket prices on YouTube TV. So a bit about this deal, but Google's reportedly paying up to $2.5 billion a season. This week, earlier in the week, Google YouTube. Came out and announced their pretty much subscriber pricing. Sunday package will cost $349 a year, or at least for a bundle with NFL Red Zone for $389 a year. Non-subscribers will pay an extra $100 a year, but Google's also offering a $100 discount for anyone who signs up during their pre-sale, which I think ends in May, from memory. So, again, the NFL always makes the headlines, whether it's on-field, off-field, or in-season, off-season. They're always around. It's going to be interesting, this deal, because it's a lot of money for YouTube TV. I mean, not for YouTube themselves. They've got plenty of money. But I'm saying, like, for them just to buy the Sunday ticket, do you think this will be a success? If so, how and why?
Well, look, you know, NFL's king, and I think that the, you know, the Sunday ticket is, you know, for many has become you know, kind of part of their fall way of life, right? You know, we call them football widows. You know, start, you know, late August, you know, they get their husbands back, you know, as their teams fall away, but, you know, they kind of get them back, you know, second week of February, right? You know, once everything's done. But, you know, I think it'll be interesting. How many people are, you know, look, a lot of people are streaming now more than they were, you know, kind of cablers. For sure. everybody's got the YouTube TV app sitting on their Roku TV or, you know, on their, yes, on their screen these days. And so, you know, what, because some people are still watching it on your laptop, you know, or have to hook your laptop up to your TV, wouldn't be successful. But everything's integrated into the TV now, and, you know, an 80 inch with YouTube TV on it, same thing, but, you know, and I think a lot of people are used to it, you know, you know, so I don't think it'll suffer. I'm curious to see how the how those sports bars, you know, kind of leverage that, you know, in the future, because what used to be a direct TV subscription, you know, kind of had all your other channels with it too, and now it's YouTube TV is a little bit different, you know, so it's a difference, you know, from watching, you know, having your TVs in your place hooked up to a direct TV satellite. Now it's you got to be a little bit different, but, you know, I think overall, you know, the prices don't surprise me. You know, the diehards are going to get it, and there'll be some people that are new subscribers. There'll be old subscribers that go over to their friend's house to watch now. But, you know, I think overall, I think they'll probably see, I don't think we'll see a dip. I don't think you see a big spike either. I think, you know, you probably see it flat, and then, you know, people will wait and see. You know, maybe they got an incredible experience. Maybe that, you know, people really like, you know, we're getting feedback on the MLS, you know, Apple deals now. You know, how are they doing? You know, you're watching. You got to wait and see. You know, deals sound great, but let's see how this thing, you know, let's talk about this, you know, midway through the season and see how those subscriber numbers look.
Absolutely. All right, everyone, it's been an absolute jam-packed episode. We've spoken a lot about many things and interesting things. And as always, I give you parting words.
Parting words. A little bit more on a personal note this week, as you know, we talk about history and looking back in time. Shared with you earlier that I'm off to my 35th college reunion this weekend to act like a 21-year-old and meet up with all my former teammates, you know, back at Duke, and seeing lots of friends, seeing, you know, my folks still live there, so get to see some family. So that'll be this weekend's kind of a fun weekend. We do have a massive lacrosse clash with the number 2 ranked Duke Blue Devils taking on and hosting the number 3 ranked Virginia Cavaliers, which 2 weeks ago was number 1 Virginia hosting number 4 Duke. And so, you know, again, you know, a little bit of sport worked into the weekend, as well as, you know, turning back the clock a little bit, seeing some friends and catching up and enjoying a little bit of fun at the old Gothic playground at Duke University. So that'll be fun. We'll hopefully I survive. And next Tuesday we've got some fun stuff to report. But I'm certainly looking forward to it. And I know that remember that we all get old a little bit, but when we go back in time, we do turn the clock back, and it's always fun to go home in that way. So I'm looking forward to that, and I'll leave all the good stories there, but I may bring one or two back with me that I can share with the audience.
We look forward to hearing them next week. All right, everyone. Mr. Rob, thank you very much once again. Thank you to all those that listen. And once again, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We definitely appreciate you and your time and effort. Thank you all. Take care, and we shall all catch up next week.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Finder Podcast. Subscribe to our show for the latest episodes on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And for more information, check out our website at sportsfinder.com.